quick introduction to today's episode with my guest, Sarah Maloney. This is an awesome episode. This got into things that I didn't think we'd get into. Sarah is a WBFF pro diva competitor, but on top of that being an incredibly impressive feat, she competed in the Worlds in Las Vegas earlier this year. She's only 21, which you would never guess from listening to this episode. She's wise beyond her years, and her mindset towards training, food, and life in general is incredible. Some of the things we talked about today was becoming a WBFF pro at 21. She actually did her first show when she was in Leaving Cert, so when she was, I think, 17, and has gone on and completely lit that world on fire. But generally, that isn't what I connect with on people, because there's a lot of other, you know, WBFF pros in incredible shape, definitely ones that aren't as young as Sarah, but their attitude isn't as balanced towards life. And again, I'm not speaking for all, just some of my experience with people that have been competing heavy in that world. Life can shift into a little bit of an obsessive or unbalanced way towards competing. And again, I lived it myself when I used to compete. But Sarah has an amazing approach when it comes to balance. And she's made the mistakes herself when she's gone into full contest prep mode, where she's closed off her time and energy with friends and family, and how she's learned from that. We talked about contest preparation in college, and we focus quite a lot on study, food, and alcohol tips for students. But because we're so different in age, in terms of there's 10 years between us, I'm 31 and Sarah's 21, that conversation on study and food and alcohol, we were able to bounce back and forth quite well on that. So there's great tips in here for students. Like, this is, if you're a student, this is an absolute must listen. But if you're working full time and you're looking to, you know, just change your body composition, or wondering how to eat out or drink at the weekends so you can have your beers or vodka or Bacardi at weekends, then I'm able to offer a vantage point or offer an input from how to do that for people that are in the working world. So I think we covered that very well on both sides. Well, I like to think so. I haven't a fucking clue. You'll listen and be like, what the fuck are you talking about? You didn't cover that at all. But hopefully that helps. We talked about things like cheat days versus small cheats every day. Sarah's training, how she brought up her glutes, how she brought up her hamstrings, her approach towards food, and then everything in between. And about three quarters of the way through, we get heavy into the mindset side, which I loved, because it explains how Sarah has done so much in such a short period of time because of the way she sees the world, her approach, her three whys when setting goals, which I think is an amazing method that I hadn't heard of previously. So I hope you enjoy today's episode. I loved this one, and it's definitely one that I will hopefully do again in the future down the line, as Sarah continues to trailblaze the WBFF world, and has got that life balance just right. So without further ado, here's today's episode with WBFF pro Sarah Maloney. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by today's guest, Sarah Maloney. Sarah is a WBFF pro diva, an online coach, and social media influencer. She made her pro debut in the WBFF world in Las Vegas this year, and on top of working as an online coach, she's also studying full-time as a student. I'm looking forward to talking all things fitness, nutrition, student life, and competing in today's episode. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Hello.
Tell everybody listening a little bit more about yourself, your origin story, who you are, where you're based, what you're doing, the whole shebang.
Well, I'm Sarah Maloney. I'm from Carlow, but I've moved up to Dublin to study health and society in DCU. I'm in my final year of college at the moment. And I do online coaching. I have competed in, I think it's 4 or 5 shows now, I think it is. 3 of which were the WBFF. which I'm now like pro division with. So that's kind of
was the world's your first pro show? Am I right in saying that? I was trying to check out the research on that, and I've seen your shape was ridiculous for those shows. By the way, for everyone listening, I'll link up the photos. Crazy. Was that your pro debut, or where was your pro debut?
Yeah, no, that was, I threw myself into the deep end and I did Worlds because that would be their main big event. So I decided to do my first pro show with them, and then I went on to do the following pro show that was in London because I was like, oh, it's only 8 weeks. So I was like, oh, I'll just go off to London and just do another pro show and see how it goes.
Yeah. Which was your first show? Talk us through the origin of what was the first show and what kind of got you into the mindset that it's like, right, I'm going to start competing in the WBFF. I'm going to go into that lifestyle. And what was the kind of trigger for that?
Well, I kind of started, like, I think it was like in school, I was starting to train and I was getting more into my nutrition side of things, mainly because I wanted to just improve my own physique when I started off, because I just didn't feel comfortable where I was at that time, which was super young at the time, which is just silly, kind of been thinking about so much with regards to my body image and all the rest at that time. But it kind of then started to, like, I was mad into sports and basketball, but then I kind of gave that up because I just didn't like the team side of things for some reason, because I felt so under pressure being in a team and then letting a team down. So I decided then when I got into the weight training side of things, I gave the basketball up. And I got so into the weight training that I kind of wanted to see, you know, where could I push it? And then I started looking into people competing. At this time, it probably wasn't as popular, or like, it's not like happening in the gyms as often. It wasn't like you go into the gym and everybody's nearly competing now. But when I was doing it, I was kind of looking at the few people that I seen on maybe online or whatever that were doing it. And then I'd done the weight training for so long, I decided I kind of wanted to just push myself that little bit more and see what I could do. So then I contacted someone then to get coaching to see, you know, could I start now? But they told me straight off the bat, they're like, you need to start growing first, because
how old were you when you started lifting first, and what was the timeline age wise in when you decided that, you know what, I'm going to do a show?
Yeah, I think I was like 16 when I started weight training, or kind of getting into, it was around that time I think I got into the gym. Finally, because I was so nervous going into the gym. And then I think it was the first show that I actually prepped for. I was 18, so I was in the Leaving Cert. That's when I did my first show.
And how old are you now, just to give context to everybody listening?
I'm 21 now.
And for those of you, a lot of you listening will be familiar with Sarah. You'll know how she looks. For those of you who aren't, you have muscle maturity of somebody significantly older, down to great work ethic. I've seen your workouts in the gym, they look great. Good genetics, I would think, as well, and solid nutrition. But yeah, it's insane that you're 21.
Oh, really? Well, I compared my photos from when I was 18 and did my first show. I was like, oh my god, what the hell was I doing? Like, I think I needed to spend another year growing. But it's good though to see kind of the progressions between, you know, when I started off to where I'm at now.
I'm going to jump back and forth with lots of different questions. Because of where you're at now, and you've done so much in such a short period of time in the grander schemes of things, like, I'm 31. I'm like, so I'm 10 years older than you. So I know that in the sense of 3 years at 18 to 21, even though it's a long time, it's a really short period of time as you get older. If you could go back to your 18-year-old self before you started competing, would you give her any advice to do with that side of things?
With the competing side of things?
Yeah. Yeah. Anything to do with, in terms of mistakes you made that you would go back and change, or any mindset approach that you're like, maybe don't worry about this. If you could go back, literally you had a time machine and could go back to your 18-year-old self before you started competing, is there any advice that you would have offered?
Yeah. And that's, I think because I was so, when I was so young, I got into my own little kind of world doing it, and it was all by myself, and I completely let my relations like slide because of it. And if I could go back, like even like meeting friends, whatever, I was like, no, can't do it because I'm so busy with everything else. I'm doing this, doing that. Where probably if I actually made the effort, I probably could fit my gym time or whatever the hell I was doing around it, because it made, like, even family and like relations, like I was just so snappy, and I don't think I appreciated them trying to help me, because I was like, no, I'm doing this myself, no, So I think if I could go back, that's the one thing. Because I think my prep side of things was pretty good for my first time. Like, obviously, like, the world's prep was a lot better because you learned from the first time. But I think prep side of things, I think I did pretty well. But definitely the side of, like, relations and actually holding on to them and, like, friends and stuff like that and making the effort, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with competing, because I was in that world myself for several years, and it tends to put everything else to the back burner. And what's worse is it becomes kind of a negative feedback loop, because you stop meeting people, you get your gym session, you get your meals in, you look better, and then you're like, it justifies the lack of time you're spending with people that are closer to you. Again, I'm speaking from personal experience. This isn't, you know, for anybody listening, this is my personal experience, and it kind of becomes a negative feedback loop. With your future preps, or even with your most recent ones, how did you change that? Did you make a conscious effort to be around more people, more family, more friends, or is it something that you'll apply going forward?
I think I was better this time around. Now, I prepped again in first year of college, and that wasn't good, because I was prepping in first year of college, and that was kind of the first year where you were kind of meeting everybody new in your first year, blah, blah, blah. And that was actually worse than probably sixth year, because in college, like, it's up to you to, you know, to meet people, whereas in kind of school, you're just there, you're at break with everybody. It's, you know, it's kind of very hard not to talk to people then. But in first year of college, it was like, you know, if college finished, I was gone. And I was also doing, like, a part-time course with PT. So, you know, in the evening times, I was spending PT, like, doing that course in the evening time when I wasn't in college. So first year of college, I definitely did not improve that whatsoever, and it probably made it worse. But then after that, and then getting to second year, I didn't prep for that entire year, because I knew, like, geez, I need to start talking to people in college and actually getting to know people, because this is my time now. So that was then I changed that and I started talking to people. And then the third year, when I kind of prepped, I actually prepped during summer, because I made sure that I actually wasn't doing the same thing that I did the last time. So I kind of wanted to make sure that I was kind of spending the summer doing that. And then when I got back to college, I was going to be able to go out and, you know, go for drinks, whatever it is. But I did then extend it a little bit, and I did go for the London show, which was about 4 weeks then of college. So it wasn't too bad. I just kind of thought about it a little bit more. And I was definitely more present in college for those kind of last few weeks of my prep, because I knew that I kind of wanted to spend my final year in college not prepping whatsoever and just kind of getting to know more people and hanging out with them more and going out a bit more as well.
Yeah, that's probably the only thing I dislike about the sport of, you know, bikini, diva, bodybuilding, men's fitness, you know, physique, is that it can be kind of a lone wolf approach, in the sense that, yes, it can be really good camaraderie if you're in a gym with lots of other people competing, but you can also take a lone wolf approach, which again is something I did very similarly. And unless you consciously make an effort to be present in college or work or with your family, your brain kind of just switches off in prep mode. What I love about you, Sarah, is you hold great shape even in your off season. Like, currently, you know, your post show, I know you had, like, your version of a slight rebound, as everybody does, but you still held incredible shape, like, probably way more mainstream look even now. What's your current eating and training protocol? What does it look like right now?
At the moment, it's actually fairly not strict whatsoever. But I'm lucky enough that when I did that long, really, really long prep for Worlds, it was such a slow process of, like, reducing calories, whatever it was, to get to stage. But before we even got to stage, we actually reversed diet nearly into the show. So my calories started to creep up, and also my cardio started to reduce, and then I competed. So I kind of nearly reversed myself into the show, that after the show, I was able to kind of, because I didn't want to track anymore. I'd spent nearly the entire year on my fitness pal tracking food. I was like, if I saw that app again, I was actually going to scream. So I just needed to just stop looking at it and just take a break from it. Because even then, like, if you're on my fitness pad, you're constantly, like, even if you go for a meal out, you're kind of constantly thinking about it, like, Jesus, what are you for the rest of the day? How's it going? So I kind of wanted to just get rid of that for a little while, or just kind of calm down a bit on it. So when I reversed out into that show, it put me in a super good position then after the show to kind of just let my fitness pad relax, because I wasn't in, like, super low calories just before my show or anything like that I needed to like, say my first show that I did, I definitely did reverse out of that. Like, I was tracking for the entire, you know, for my like off season to grow as well. I was tracking for my entire year for that, to add some muscle tissue. So that was a lot more stricter, but I definitely needed to track after that. Whereas after this show, it wasn't the same. I could just kind of, I had built up my calories back up to where it was maintenance wise, and I was happy enough to just not track for that.
And you do a kind of a traditional bulk versus cut. For those of you that are not following Sarah's YouTube, I'll link that up in the show notes as well. And I know you do kind of a traditional bulk cut. What changes when you go from, say, a bulk, which for you is clearly adding lean muscle tissue, like the quality way of bulking, because it's just adding quality muscle tissue to your frame. What changes in nutrition or training do you have? Do you eat different foods, or do you eat more of the foods that you normally eat? And do you train differently when you're going through a bulking versus cutting cycle?
So the first time that I, like, when I started off kind of getting ready for a show, I did like a 6 months growing phase where I did increase calories, but my training wasn't nowhere near what it was the second time around I did it, because I was in the gym and I was doing my bits of training. I was eating more food, but I actually wasn't looking at, geez, like, am I increasing my lifts or what am I doing in the gym? Like, there was no structure really there. So then the following time, like after I competed that time, and then I took a year off to grow then, and that was just increasing calories. But I got to obviously a point where I kind of was happy enough where my calories were at. I was still growing with that because I had an entire year to spend doing that. But my training was a lot more structured, way more structured. Like, I was actually progressively overloading my lifts. Like, everything was starting to increase, and I was, you know, pushing myself in the gym with the likes of, say, because my feedback was I needed to grow my glutes and my lower body a little bit more, hamstrings. So I spent a hell of a lot of time on, say, the likes of hip thrust and actually improving that rather than just going through the motions of, you know, oh yeah, I did hip thrust today, woohoo. I actually was trying to progressively increase my lifts. So that definitely changed in that year. And I could see massive changes. Like, I was only able to do 80 kg hip thrust at the start of my lean gaining phase. And then towards the end of that, it was like 200 kg. And I progressively worked towards that. So that was the biggest change. Because both bulks, I was increasing calories. That didn't change for me. It was the training that took the effect kind of the next level.
What does a typical glute workout look like for you?
I always like kind of push, see, with training and college now as well, like sometimes I could get up in the morning and I could spend 40 minutes in the gym. So I always make sure that the first two things I do is either, like, say the likes, I always kind of pick between the main kind of lifts, like deadlifts, squats, hip thrust, glute bridges. And I pick one or two of those to start off and focus on that. And then I'll work towards kind of maybe the accessory work, which is like lunges or leg press or the glute accessory work, like glute kickback. So it kind of varies. It's not as like super, super strict, but I always make sure that when I go to the gym, I have at least done the two compound lifts or the two major lifts that I want to do, like the hip thrust or squats or whatever it is, and then go on to my, so say if I only have 40 minutes before college, if I miss one or two accessory movements, it's not the end of the world.
Do you have a glute day, or is it something that you hit several times a week?
At the moment, like, my feedback from my last show was, if I grow my quads anymore, I'm in the next division. So I have not, my 80% of my training now is glutes and hams. And I would do, like, say, I actually do three lower bodies across the week, and I might only do one upper body now, because again, it's just kind of maintaining my upper body, because I don't want to get to the next division. I'm happy enough with where I'm at in that kind of division, rather than going any further, because if I went any further, I'd be at the bottom of that, and I don't even want to be in fitness anyways.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, that's a big step up in the sense of actual amount of muscle mass you'd even need to carry for stage as a female. Do you have a favorite glute exercise, like one particular one that you're like, this is my baby, this is the one I love?
I think like it used to be hip thrust, but to be honest, I did so much hip thrust that I'm sick of the bloody exercise, but I still do it. It's probably, I actually love lunges, or kind of some sort of variation lunge, because I used to never be able to do a lunge without just total quad engagement. But now it's like the fact that I can actually feel my glutes working out, like, geez, now I'm really connected with my glutes. I can actually do it now in a lift like that.
What would be your tips for people that are similar, that want to build their glutes, but they are lunging through their quads and can't particularly feel their glutes? Was it a biomechanical switch? Was it just a different way of planting your foot? What made you switch from being quad dominant on a lunge to hitting more glutes?
I think that was because I say when I started off training, like I was say I was doing squats, it was all quad. I was always quad dominant. So I actually, when I started doing hip thrust and glute focus exercise and actually built the strength up in my glutes, when I started to transition over to lifts that say maybe was always quad dominant for me, my glutes were starting to catch up strength wise with my quads. And the fact that, like say, doing the likes of activation and doing my band work and actually trying to get that kind of muscle to mind, like use your glutes, then I was able to bring it into the likes of a lunge. It wasn't really I was doing anything different. It was that I kind of catch my glutes up to my quads and how strong they were.
Yeah, it's that mind muscle. The reason I wanted to bring that up is I think it's kind of mutually beneficial for people listening, because obviously any females that are looking to bring up their glutes, build their bum, etc. But also for guys, it's just the parameters that would change. Like if you're an athlete particularly, glutes is something that I do so much direct work on. If you're a runner, if you're playing GA or playing rugby or soccer, like glutes are so important. It's just that the parameters may change. And that's why I wanted to ask that, because it's a very common issue where people are lunging through their quads and can't activate their glutes. And as you said, it's just building up nearly that mind-muscle connection. With nutrition then, Sarah, what kind of foods do you typically eat, or what approach do you follow? Is it a flexible dieting approach? Is it a clean eating approach? What kind of approach do you take towards diet mostly?
So before I started competing, I was a complete clean eater. I was taking all the stuff I learned off like bloody YouTube and smoothies and salads, and that's how you made progress, yada, yada, yada. And that put me in such a binge routine. Like I was binging massively on a Saturday. I can't describe how bad my binges were when I first started off into trying to lose weight.
Was it junk food binges on the Saturday, or was it just too much food in general? What did the binges look like?
Oh my God. I read a book where it just told me I could kind of, I had to go really, really low carb, high fat and all the rest during the week. And then I was allowed one day when I choose to go for a binge, or not a binge. I meant they said enjoy a meal out. But I was like, oh, this is my cheat day. I can have whatever I want. So I picked the Saturday, and I swear to God, the first time that I had gone through that entire week, because I was someone who ate like crap food all the time. So then I'd gone to this extreme, and then when I actually finally got to that day where I could have that treat day, it was actually like Christmas the night before. I'd gone into Tesco, I'd bought I think about 100 euros worth of absolute just everything. Like food I didn't even normally eat. Like I just, oh yeah, I want this, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to have it tomorrow or the next day. So I had a big bag of stuff, and I woke up I think at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and I never woke up that early. And I just couldn't stop all day. It was just, I was constantly eating food. And then when I actually had the meal out with my family, that was the whole main thing about it, go out and have a cheap meal. I was so full from everything I'd eaten. My stomach was in knots from it. Like I just did not stop. It was an entire day of just eating everything around me. And then Sunday I'd feel absolutely guilty and all that kind of jazz again.
I assume that's not what you do in terms of how you approach cheat meals now. How do you approach cheat meals, cheat days, etc. right now?
Yeah, that's right. When I discovered like tracking and looking at food, and then I was like, geez, I can have chocolate and like still make progress. I was absolutely mind blown by this, because I was like, what was I doing before? Like restricting all the time and feeling like waiting for the entire week for my Saturday. Like it was just such a sad way of me going about my nutrition, that when I started going into like tracking foods and figuring out that I could have these kind of treats or whatever I wanted and be flexible with it and still make the progress I wanted. That's how I approached my like preps then as well. And I think that's why I had a good relationship with food after my preps, because some people go down the meal plan route, and then when they're off that meal plan, they find it very, very hard then to kind of come back to day to day life of not being on that meal one to five kind of idea approach. Whereas I had that flexible idea that if I kind of wanted something, I could have it. And then after prep, it wasn't so like I haven't had it for 12 weeks and just go on a nuts binge afterwards.
Yeah, no, that was me. Yeah, I was that person. I was chicken and broccoli for 6 or 8 weeks, and then Ben and Jerry's for three meals a day for 2 or 3 weeks. It's a terrible way of doing things. But you know, fools keep an expensive school. And I was one of those fools. What does your typical food day look like now? If you were taking us through a typical day of eating, what does it look like? Your breakfast, lunch and dinner? How do you split your meals? What snacks do you use? What would a typical eating day look like for you?
So like when I wake up in the morning, I'm never really hungry. And I always kind of like my first meal is never until like maybe 12 or something like that. Cause I just like to, I'm a nighttime kind of eater. I prefer to eat in the evening time rather than the morning. So usually in the morning time, it could be anything from eggs and toast, or it could be oats or something like that. It varies so much now that I can, because I enjoy it. Like, some days that I wake up and I can have what I want. So those are kind of my two main ones. It's usually always eggs or something like that. And I actually have gotten into vegetarian options as well for a bit of a change. And then, because my breakfast is so late, I usually don't have lunch. It's usually kind of, I'm a snacker as well. So I could come home from training and have the likes of a smoothie or with a protein powder in it. And then rice cakes and chicken is my favorite for some reason. And then dinner is it could be anything. It could be turkey mince stir fry with rice, or could be black bean pasta. I don't know if anybody has black bean pasta, or I've gone into Aldi and got the black bean spaghetti because you need it. It's unreal. And then evening time, then it's some sort of something sweet. And I'm always snacking on dark chocolate all the time.
Preference. I'm a huge dark chocolate person too. Do you have a preference for dark chocolate?
Yeah. Oh my God. My meal timing and everything is so sporadic. It's actually, I couldn't even tell you what it's like some days.
Does that get very structured in prep then? Is that now down to more intuitive eating, or do you hold that similar approach in prep and just track the calories? Or how does that look?
Yeah, I track calories during prep, but still even then, I wouldn't have set meals. I was definitely prepping a lot more, meal prep for college and stuff like that. So my meal times I would have been eating a lot more often than say now. Sometimes if I don't feel hungry, I'm not going to eat. Whereas prep, I was a little bit more strict with post-workout meal before I go to the gym and all the rest.
And then in terms of cheat meal, do you do that once a week, or is it just every day a little bit? Is that the approach now?
Yeah, I'm not going down that cheat meal route. But if I want something, if we're going out for meal out or whatever, it's not I don't see it as a cheat meal. If I can make better options, I will. If I fancy something that I want, I'll have it. It's not so Saturday is my cheat meal and going out or getting a takeaway or whatever it is. If something comes up social wise and I'm going out, it's kind of what I decide then if I want to make the better option or not.
Do you drink?
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk me through one of the things that's so interesting, I think, about you. There's so many things, but one, how you can stay in shape with, and again, working obviously online as a coach as well, but also being a full-time student. What are your kind of tips and tricks around that for just the lifestyle tips in general? And then how do you approach alcohol, factoring that in? Because that's a big part of the student lifestyle.
Yeah, and that's especially with clients that are say college students, that's the one thing that I actually love teaching them, how to go about it, because they think that when they have to start something, they have to cut out all that social life out, and I've done that in prep and it's not fun. So the way I do it now is first of all, say if I'm going out drinking, it's always usually spirits, lower calorie options. Luckily I don't actually like beer anyways or anything like those kind of heavier drinks, so it's usually always spirits, and they're only 80 calories. There's nothing huge about that. And say every other day around that, it's my nutrition's fairly well, it's good food, I'm training, I'm doing say the bit of cardio that I want, so my activity levels and all that is good around that. And then say on a night out, or if I'm going out, maybe my food might be a little bit different during the day, so I usually always try to aim to hit my protein before I head out. So maybe my meals might be a little bit more protein dense throughout the day, because I'm not going to be having protein meals while I'm out drinking. And a lot of the calories from say carbs or fats, or whatever, is going to come from my alcohol. It's kind of the way I would see it, even though it's empty calories anyways. But the main thing I think is the struggle is when I get back home after drinking, because either if I'm out, if they go out for food after drinking, or when I get home, if I enter the kitchen, I could eat the kitchen out of it, just not even realizing what the hell I'm doing. I could slice the toast and keep going and keep going and keep going. And then I won't go. I'll go to bed and be like, Jesus, where has that whole loaf of pan of bread gone? So that's kind of the little struggle that I would have. But what I've done is first of all, don't go into the kitchen and leave something out. I just want something salty when I come in from a night out. So it could be just even a low calorie. Do you know there's a little low calorie salt and vinegar packets of crisps?
Yeah.
I got two bags of those. That's fine. I'm off to bed then. As long as I just don't go into the kitchen after a night out, when I'm out of it a little bit, because I make really poor choices then. But it's usually just sticking to kind of the lower calorie spirits, kind of maybe going about my nutrition a little bit differently on the day of to make sure I hit my protein. I'll probably train as well, so I have a bit of activity, probably dancing all night as well. So that, again, that's going to add up. And then it's just my nutrition afterwards, how I go about not going into the kitchen and just having something snack-wise there to kind of keep me relatively not going nuts on the calories.
I love that. Don't go into the kitchen. Like, I'm big on systems over willpower. Like, and that's the height of it is like, just don't go to the kitchen. Like, just keep the bags of crisps beside the bed and don't go to the kitchen.
What about the next day then, in the sense of, do you have any like hangover protocol? Do you go back eating normal, or do you be a bit more lenient with food? Do you train on that day? How do you approach like the day, the night, the morning, day after, say the night out before?
So that completely depends on how hard I've gone the night before. Sometimes I can train. Like, if I come in and have a good decent amount of water and all the rest and I feel actually grand in the morning, I will probably train that day. Now, it will be super light. It'll probably be like circuit based, because I'm not going to go in and start hip thrusting 200 kg after a night out. There's no way. So it'll be probably more circuit based. Might do a little bit of cardio and just kind of get myself moving. Because once I start moving after a night out, my food choices then just are a lot better, because I don't, like, if I wake up, feel shit and just sit in the bed, and then my food choices are going to be a little bit worse. So if I can get up, get some sort of activity, I'm pretty well with nutrition afterwards. And usually after a night out, I'm the lucky one. I'm not hungry after a night out. I just, anything that food wise makes me like sick. So I'm lucky that way. I don't actually crave like a McDonald's or anything like that after a night out. But the main thing I would do is, if you're able to do a bit of activity, do it, because it sets you up then for the rest of your day and what you do food choices then afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. That's something that I've talked about in the podcast quite a bit and on social media channels. Now, I don't drink as much anymore, but even when I do, it's trying to do that little bit of activity the next day, because it's not normally not the alcohol that sets people back, students or anybody. It's the food choices you make around it, like the, you know, eating the whole pan of bread when you come in from a night out, or that's going for McDonald's. Yeah, exactly. Again, I've done it myself. And or going for McDonald's or pizza or Domino's the next day. It's the food that tends to hold back people's progress, as opposed to, you know, the one night of alcohol, particularly when you're going with low calorie options like that. To move away slightly from the alcohol side, but to stay on the student angle, one of the things that comes up a lot with students, and I think this is probably applicable for everybody, is food costs and, you know, spending money on food. Obviously, you work with a lot of people online as well, so you have an income source. But do you have any food tips for students in terms of cost, or what you do in terms of your prep? Because I know that's something a lot of students tend to struggle with.
Yeah, definitely. And like, The way I, like, when I go shopping or whatever, it's always in the likes of Aldi or Lidl. Like, you don't need to be, like, I could go into Tesco and spend about €6 and I only get one bag of like food. Whereas if I go to Aldi or Lidl and spend that same amount, I have about 4 or 5 bags of food. So it's choosing where you're shopping. Like, if I go into DCU and go to Spar or whatever, and I get like a couple of bits and pieces there, it's about €20, which is silly amounts of money to spend on just random like snacks, like protein bars. They're fine to have every so often, but if you're doing that every single day and you add that up, you're like, I could have had a whole week's shopping worth for those kind of couple of snacks I was buying every single day. So I always make sure that, say, before my college week starts, like say Sunday or Saturday, I'll go to Aldi and I'll pick like the food that I want for that week. So it could be just a bit of protein, meat, and then the likes of frozen veg rather than getting all fresh, because again, that's more expensive, frozen fruit as well. And then prep my meals so that, say, I'm not eating out every single day, or having some sort of snacks with me that maybe I've prepared or that were cheaper in Aldi, rather than going to the shop and always getting, like, say, the likes of a €2 or €2.50 protein bar, because that adds up, especially if you're getting coffee on top of that. Because I used to, especially during prep, I used to bring in my own coffee, because you pay 50 cents in DCU for like hot water. I think it's even cheaper if you have your own cup as well. So it's like, right, that's me, because you save a lot of money there, because coffee and Starbucks, all that is like €3. So you're going to save money if you just bring your own food with you and you do that bit of food shop at the weekend.
What do your, you mentioned snacking quite a lot there. What would your typical snacks be?
So Aldi have the best dark chocolate ever, and I always get that. They also have like the bags of like the really, really low calorie kind of crisps kind of things. Rice cakes, fruit in there as well. Those be kind of main things. And then also like sliced chicken. I absolutely love just eating sliced chicken for some reason. But those, I get those all in Aldi. And just like, they're so easy to bring to college. There's very little preparation that. Throw a few of that into your bag and you're off your go. Like things like that, they're so easy rather than spending money every single day. Because I notice myself in DCU when I get lazy, I start spending stupid amounts of money in the shop.
Yeah, that's really common. Like, again, systems over willpower, like bring the food with you. I think that applies to everyone in college, people going to work in general. Like I travel quite a bit, and I never leave without a bag of almonds and dark chocolate with me. Just because it, worst case scenario, you're stuck and you can't get some food and you're hungry. I get hungry, and when I get hungry, I can't focus or function. So it's kind of serves a purpose for me in that side. But to just go and have them, you know, better have it and not need it than need it and not have it. In the sense of supplements then, do you have any staple supplements that you use? I know that the needs for supplement needs go up dramatically in contest prep because you're trying to fill in gaps that you may not be getting in your nutrition. But do you have any staple supplements that you're currently using or ones that you use throughout the year?
Probably only things, like I'm actually honestly so bad at taking supplements full stop, prep or no prep. But the things I always keep in is the likes of creatine is definitely one. I usually do have a protein powder now because I'd struggle to get my protein in otherwise. Now, prep, that wouldn't be the same because I would have always had my meals prepped and chicken and all that done in Tupperware boxes. And then the likes of like a multivitamin, a fish oil, that's kind of like you could go and then further get vitamin D, vitamin C, because they're all really, really good ones to have there as well. But I'm really, really bad, honestly, with taking supplements, if I'm honest. But I will always have creatine. I will always have like some sort of multivitamin and vitamin C.
You mentioned creatine there, and I definitely want to pull that one because one of the things that I get frequently asked is creatine for females. And I always answer it the same way, that to base your supplements off your goals and not your gender. But I think it'll probably hit home more coming from you. Talk to me about your thoughts on creatine for females.
I think there's people just think because it's creatine, and I don't know what it is, but it's always thought because if you're weight training, you're having creatine, you're going to get real bulky or you're going to hold loads of water. That's the biggest one, is people feel like they're going to hold water, like they're going to get fat because they're having creatine. But like for me, it helps with performance injuring, you're in the gym, strength, and it hasn't affected. I take it throughout prep all the time. There's been no effects with regards to weight loss or anything like that. And that's what females especially, I think, are really, really nervous about when they're taking creatine.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those, I think there's a misconception around that supplement. It's nearly the 5-6 year ago equivalent of girls lifting weights will get massive jacked and bulky. And thankfully the likes of you are completely dispelling that. It's like lifting weights won't make you jacked and bulky. It'll make you really lean and toned and have a very good physique. And creatine is similar. If you're looking to build muscle and add size, it's irrespective of what your gender. It doesn't matter what your gender is. Always base your supplements off your goals. Like I always laugh. I remember chatting to a guy in the gym one of the days, probably about 3 months ago, and he was telling me about creatine. And he was like, yeah, that fucking creatine, I get awful fat and bloated and watery on that. And I'm like, okay. I was like, go on. And he was like, yeah. I get awful, it makes my face bloated and the whole lot. And I was like, what's your diet like? Oh, well, I'm bulk and I'm eating McDonald's twice a day. I'm like, the creatine's not making you fat and bloated and watery. I'm like, the 2-a-day McDonald's is making you fat and bloated and watery. So just to let people know, there's a good chance, unless you have some form of polymorphism in your gene where you can't absorb one of the amino acids within creatine for some reason, it's unlikely it's making you bloated, fat or bulky. That's probably your nutrition, to just say that. What about your sleep then, Sarah? How are you as a sleeper? Are you a good sleeper, a bad sleeper? How are you normally with that?
Sleep for me, it usually is good. But say when I was prepping and then I also had college and I also had assignments and I had a huge, big to-do list, basically, I can't sleep because of that, because I get highly, highly stressed very easily, especially when I take on maybe a little bit too much. So when I'm like that kind of situation, I always do like the likes of, say, a brain dump or something like that before bed. So write down the list of stuff that I have to get done, because sometimes if I park my thoughts there and say, look, Sarah, you're going to get that done tomorrow, it's fine. Nothing's going to happen tonight. So there's no point worrying about, you know, what you have to do tomorrow, because you need to sleep and you need to prioritize sleep now. So usually if I'm highly stressed and have a lot of things going on, sleep suffers massively for me. I find it very, very hard to get to sleep.
Is there any other things you use to help you sleep? Then do you use any supplements or any other strategies besides the mind dump? Or is it something that you just kind of suck up and get on with and realize that if I'm feeling stressed, your sleep will be affected? Or do you have any other tools in the toolkit that you come to when it comes to, even when it comes to de-stressing, but particularly in respects to sleep?
So I used to take like the likes of ZMA kind of supplements, but I just stopped taking them because I wanted to figure out, can I actually sleep well without adding supplements and all these extra little bits in? So what I have been massively doing, especially this year, because, you know, final year of college, trying to manage the last semester of stress is going to be really, really hard for me. So what I'm going to try and do is set like a bedtime routine, which sounds so childish when you say it, but it's so massively important, is having like, say, a switch off point. So say if I'm on the laptop doing work or if I'm doing college work, I need to have a time where I'm working to, right, 10 o'clock, that's it. Spend my hour then winding down and chilling out, whatever I want to do. Start to turn off the phone as well. The phone is the biggest thing. I could get into bed and aim to go to bed at 11, but be on the phone for another 2 hours. So it's trying to like leave the phone away from the side of my table. And kind of even the likes of Headspace app as well. If I find it really, really hard to sleep, and it should be nearly, or just a routine anyway, it should be just thrown on the Headspace app, the mindfulness apps, that's what they are. And using that to kind of calm down and just kind of the thoughts that are going through my head, to kind of move them to the Headspace app and listen to what he's saying rather than everything else going on in my own head nearly.
Yeah, I think that's something I speak about. I've spoken about quite recently on the podcast about the nighttime routine. And I always use my daughter Holly's nearly four, that your kids are so good with nighttime routines. And then we stopped doing it as adults. And about a year ago, I started doing the same, a nighttime, an hour before bed. That's complete switch off, dick around time, watching a movie, Netflix, hanging out, and then blocking out the blue light before bed, because that blue light in the phone will kill your sleep. Like that, it just stops melatonin production. And there's been, and I'm really bad for that. I could be on my phone right up until I go to bed. And otherwise, I use blue light blocking glasses to at least block out that blue light. But that's a really good way of using the mind. Was it, which app did you say it was? Was it the,
which, see, the Headspace or the Calm app, those two apps I think are absolutely brilliant. Like if you don't like someone talking to you, because that's the Headspace app, the Calm app is really good because you can just pick like, say the likes of listen to rain. Do you know, kind of rain against the window? That's a really, really nice one to sleep to.
Oh, I must check that out, because I've tried Headspace several times and it's not one that supported me. That I just couldn't, it doesn't lean to, I think, my personality type at this moment in time. But Calm sounds way more me, because I actually use like a noise machine before bed. So I think that could work really well. I'm definitely going to try that like tonight. How do you handle stress around exams then? Do you do anything differently, or is it something that you've always had and something you deal with, or do you have any different protocols that you apply? Do you train to stay stress-free coming up to exams, or how do you approach that?
I think the hard, like what a lot of people do in college, and like I've done it myself as well, is they throw like to the side their training, their own just like chill out time. Everything goes to the side until they have the likes of their exam done or their assignment done. And I used to do the exact same thing, but since kind of balancing things out where I need that hour to train in between, like for my study break nearly, it helps me have a bit of headspace. I get a bit of fresh air and then I come back and I feel a hell of a lot refreshed. But how I go about that is I need to plan myself to be able to put those kind of switch off times. Like say I'll the night before on my phone, I'll put in like say half an hour increments or an hour increments of what I'm getting done and what I'm doing in these times. And that's hugely important, especially if you're trying to balance college, if you have work as well, and then your own training and taking care of yourself as well. You're juggling a lot there. So you need to try and put in, like say 9 a.m, wake up, whatever you're doing, 10 a.m, start studying from 10 to 12, 12 to whatever time you're going to the gym, you're doing your bit of training, you come home and then you have your time for food, post-workout. And then you have another slot where you're doing a bit more studying, and then you maybe have a half an hour break. So kind of putting your big to-do list and then putting into little time increments and making sure you're putting in time for your bit of headspace, because that's going to help, but helps me massively with a bit of stress levels to like let it out with just smashing around a few weights. And then in the evening time, having a switch off point where you cut off, because if you go beyond, you know, where you're starting to like brain fog, there's no point stressing yourself up, trying to fit in all and cramming this stuff in when you've kind of reached your burnout point. You just need to stop it there and then take your break, resume then tomorrow and kind of do that again, because you'd be a hell of a lot more refreshed if you take that and stop there and try again tomorrow.
I love that. I think any student that ever asked me that question, I'm going to refer them back to this point in the podcast. It's something that I've had experience with myself firsthand when because my undergraduate degree was in business and marketing. And in my third year, I remember I did the traditional give up sleep, get up super early, study. I was drinking loads of Lucozade and just eating chocolate to fuel myself. And you retain nothing. And then as I realized, and I actually started to learn a little bit about, you know, REM sleep and REM cycles and down restorative sleep and how you process your memories throughout the day, I'm like, Jesus, I did the complete opposite to what you should really be doing when it comes to study time, where it's like, get your sleep, factor in your time, quality over quantity, train and do something physical to get out of your head. And it's actually going to impact you better. I did that in my fourth year and ended up doing so much better. So that's great advice, Sarah. I'm going to take a slightly different direction now with some other questions. So feel free to expand on them or answer them however you see fit. When I say the word successful, what personality trait or characteristic comes to mind and why?
I think it's doing being able to set some goals, but actually being the person who puts in the steps to get towards those goals. There's anybody can set a goal. But being successful is actually, right, you have this goal, right, how am I going to get there and actually start thinking about the steps towards that goal, because it's so easy to set goals, but you need to actually put action in place to reach them. And someone who's motivated to do that and see that as a goal that they want to see, that's how people, I think, are successful, if they actually put the steps in place.
What does your process look like? Because someone that's done so well in the competing world is doing so well in the online space, building up social media. How do you goal set? Do you have a process? Do you put them up and do visualization? Do you write them down? What's your process for setting goals?
I have, like, say if I, like, people compete because, oh, I just want to stand on stage, or it's the new thing now, everybody wants to do it. But I compete for, like, maybe one, I want to see what shape I can get into. And that's probably just the one thing there. But I always have three whys to every goal that I set. And they have to be at a deeper level than, say, one for competing. Say one is to get into the best shape of my life and see how I look and see what I've progressed in. Number two could be, it's a challenge for me. I want to push myself because I know I can. And the third one could be, say, it could be, you know, maybe doing a show like that could be successful for me in terms of work or in terms of just building up the ladder for competing. But I always, every goal I set, I have three whys, and they have to be, you know, one could be, you know, maybe not so deep, but the other two have to be a little bit deeper, so that when you're maybe struggling, that you actually turn to those three whys with your goal setting, so that they kind of give you that push, that this is why I'm doing it and this is the reasons why, and then it kind of gives you that help towards the goal, I think.
Oh, I love that answer. That's so good. What purchase of €100 or less has most positively affected your life in the last 12 to 24 months?
What purchase?
Yeah. So anything you've bought that's, you know, cost you €100 or less, that has had a huge impact on your life. That, again, whatever comes to mind, it might be way less than that. It might be 99 euro. Anything that comes to mind that you bought in the last 12 to 24 months that you're like, that's had a huge impact on my life in a positive way?
I'm going to say my planner. Because I like my planner because it helps me in whole aspects of life. It gets me to do stuff, gets me productive, gets me organized. So, like, say if I have like things I want to do or goals I have set, I write them into my journal, my planner, and, you know, structure it out. I like structure, I like organizing, and it helps me in all aspects of life. Just my planner that cost me about €20 because I got a nice one this year.
Yeah, it's so funny, like, success leaves clues, and it's so often that I interview or talk to people and in some form in the interview it'll come up to their daily plan, that they've got a planner of some sort that they either have their to-do list on, or their one thing, or their gratitude list, or there's something, but
it comes up so frequently for anyone listening, success leaves clues. If you were given the chance to live one day in the life of somebody else, living or dead, who would it be and why?
That's a hard one. What the hell would I choose? I'm not actually sure. I can't even think at the top of my head for that one. I know it'd have to be someone who always comes across as really, really positive and happy, because I'd love to see actually what that feels like, but sometimes like I'll have really, really bad days, and I'd love to see how they go about something like that, or how they pull themselves out of it, because I think I could learn from that and apply it to my own life if I could figure out, you know, if you're in that kind of have a really, really bad day, how does someone pull themselves out of that sometimes and then continue on? So whoever's like that, that's who I'd like to live the day like.
Perfect. What's your favorite movie?
I love Rush Hour, any of those.
Yeah, great choice. What about Netflix? Do you watch Netflix or are you a series person?
Netflix, definitely. The one series that I watched that I honestly cried for 2 weeks after finished and I wouldn't watch another series afterwards was Breaking Bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I cried for 2 weeks after that finished.
That's so funny. Breaking Bad is the one I always get such pushback on this, because I went to season 2 or 3, whenever it started to drop slightly, and then I fell off the wagon with it and people were like, no, 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 come back on it. And then I'm like, shit, there's another couple of seasons. I don't know if I'm ready to commit to it. I always get pushback. People are like, and I'm going to get a shitload of DMs after this, be like, get back on Breaking Bad.
It is the best. Anybody listen to this knows it's the best.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite book or any book that has had a huge impact on your life? Or I know you read a lot, obviously, with college and it's mostly college stuff, but do you read a lot? And if so, is there any book that jumps to mind that's had a positive impact on your life or a particular favorite?
I'm a really, really bad reader, if I'm honest, and it is all college stuff. But I did read a book that actually does stick to my mind that last year that wasn't like college related, and it was called like How to Be Friends and Influence People.
Dale Carnegie, yeah.
Yeah, because it was just really, really, like, it helped me, say when I'm doing like coaching sale inquiry calls, it helped me massively with just how I went about those a little bit more, and it helped me just in kind of work side of things really, really well.
I was chatting on a podcast with Johnny Ward a few months back, who's visited every country in the world, and the two of us were talking about how that book, if I could pick one book that people leaving school would have as required reading, it would be Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's actually like the worst title ever. Like, I remember I didn't read it for years. So I'm like, I'm not fucking reading that. Like, and then I read it and I'm like, this book's, it's not about how to win friends and influence. Well, it is, I suppose. It's about, well, you know, how to be a better person, how you should behave with other people. Anyone listening to this, if you haven't, and particularly if you're interested in personal development and if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably in that realm, I would definitely consider How to Win Friends and Influence People as a read. It's an incredible book that just makes you a little bit of a better person having read it.
Yeah, and the only thing is, when you're on the bus reading it, I was so embarrassed by the front cover, like, Jesus, that's a sad one over there trying to win friends and influence people.
And the irony of it is, that book has sold millions and millions and millions of copies. It's one of those books that's always on, like, the Amazon bestseller list, like, continuously. And it was written, that book is, I'm not sure that I could be way off of the timeline, but it's definitely 30, 40 years old. Like, that book is, it's way older than me. It's definitely older than you. Like, it was written ages ago. And it's timeless. Like, it's one of those that as long as people are people, it's beneficial. Because you're so knowledgeable, Sarah, in what you do and the amount of information you put out online, particularly on Instagram, but YouTube as well. How do you consume information? Do you learn a lot through YouTube or through podcasts? What's your way of kind of upskilling yourself? Because you're constantly building your knowledge in fitness and nutrition. What's your process, or what do you use, or what tools do you use to continuously improve yourself?
Definitely because Instagram, I definitely need to do a big sift through my followings, because I consume a lot of nonsense as well. It's so easy to do that. And there is like a couple of people that I do follow on Instagram that are so knowledgeable, and I get so much from them, that I need to start just following those people rather than all the other shite that I follow as well on Instagram. But the main kind of thing of how I kind of say with Instagram, I can get very lost in that and, you know, not take the best information for that, is the podcast. And then recently I started doing Audible as well, because, you know, with college and stuff, I find it hard to sit down and read, and I should really be reading the books for college. But say if I'm walking to and from the gym, like it's 30 minutes walking to the gym and walking back, or if I'm walking to the bus or on the bus, listen to a podcast. I get so many podcasts listened to during the week, or like an entire book each week, just got walking to and from the gym, listen to a book. You can choose then what you want to listen to and what information you want to get from it, because you have to search it. And if it's something that's going to benefit you, then at least it's a bit easier to kind of be specific there rather than Instagram.
Yeah, something that I talk about quite a lot is turning your car into a library on wheels. Like, I intentionally drive, you know, 2 hours every day, an hour to and from the gym. Like, I've got a gym in my house. I've got a garage home gym, but I intentionally drive to and from a gym so that I can get an hour of podcasts. Normally in the morning is a podcast on the way in, and then I always listen to an audiobook on the way out. And if you're doing that consistently, you're going to get through quite a lot of audiobooks if you're listening half an hour or an hour every day. In terms of podcasts, is there two or three that come to mind that you're subscribed to, that you listen to regularly, or do you just work through the search engine based on what you're trying to learn at that moment in time? Any that you recommend or that you like or subscribe to?
Brian Keane Fitness podcast. And then I like Sigma. I really like Sigma's podcast, because I think he's really, really good at talking to people and gets kind of really the questions that, you know, they would be in your head, but you don't know how to ask them, or, you know, some of the questions you're like, Jesus, that's a really, really good one. So I like his kind of way he talks to people and the questions he asks. So those would be kind of that would be one anyways. He'd be the main one, because they're kind of easy and he covers lots of topics. But then the other one is just search engine and looking at certain topics.
Yeah, that's something I love Danny's podcast. I had Danny on the podcast, actually, it was a long time ago now, it was probably about a year and a half ago, from Sigma Nutrition. But that's something that I've started going down the rabbit hole with, in the sense of searching podcasts for the topics, and using it kind of like how you'd use YouTube. And I never thought about that until I've spoken to a couple of guests and they're like, yeah, I actually haven't subscribed to, you know, many podcasts, but I'll search, you know, I'm thinking of doing the keto diet, so I'll search keto in the search engine on podcasts, and then they'll start listening to some random episodes of people that they recognize. I actually think that's a very effective way of building your knowledge. I do it quite a lot with business. So for example, this week I'm running webinars, and I was just searching the top podcast for webinars in terms of structure, the best one to use. And it's a really effective way, if you think of it like YouTube, just the audio version. It can be a very easy way of consuming information, because as you said, if you're walking half an hour to and from the gym, you can consume that and you're learning on your whole, on your journey.
I know, because like last year I spent like listen to music, which is fine too, but I could be so much more productive if I listened to at least one way down to the gym a podcast.
Yeah, it's that's something that I probably about 4 years ago, I was like, okay, I'm saving my music and I'm only ever going to listen to music now when I train. Which means that you look forward to it more. And what I'm really fucking, I'm such an addictive personality. I'm really bad if I like get a song or two that I like, I just like hit it on repeat and listen to it over and over. And like, that's fine if you're only in the gym once a day, but if you're doing that like throughout the day, you get sick of that song and you're like, right, I can't listen to fucking, you know, Hey Yeah by Outkast one more time or whatever fucking song is like top of the list.
I think I had like every single prep, I had one specific song that like got me through a Stairmaster session, because it was like so sad and meaningful. Like, I'm doing this because I want to do this. So
what
I had
comes to mind? What we can you name one of those songs? Any that jumped to mind straight off the top of your head?
There was one during the summer. What was his name? He had curly hair. I don't know what it was. It was during the summer that was a big, massive song. Can't remember what it was off the top of my head, but that was last year's one. But I think I disappeared from my brain because I didn't want to listen to it ever again.
It brings you right back into that moment on the Stairmaster. What do you use for music? Is it Spotify or do you use YouTube? What's your app for music?
Spotify now. I finally got into the Spotify. I used to be the old-fashioned buy the songs on iTunes kind of gig, but now I've learned about Spotify and I'm not going back.
Yeah, Spotify, it's actually, again, that's what I use as well. And the amount of people that are starting to listen, like I've got a few thousand downloads on every episode through Spotify alone, which is something that I wouldn't have expected when I started the podcast first, because it's iTunes and Stitcher and Android and the other devices some people listen through the website. But it, Spotify is something that's grown massively for podcasts too. So yeah, if you're listening to this on Spotify, I acknowledge that. Last one. If you got a chance to post one message, quote, or thought on social media that would reach everybody in the Western world, what would it be? So if there's a quote that you live your life by, or any message that you've been told that you've internalized yourself, what pops to mind there that if you could pass it on to the entire world, particularly the Western world, what jumps to mind with that?
Kind of recently, just because I did a YouTube video and it was like, what was one of your biggest struggles for during like your fitness journey? And kind of the thing that popped into my head there was talking nicely to yourself, because my God, I was so hard on myself. You know, I was constantly giving out about if I did something wrong, even though I forgot about all the things I did right that week, and constantly thinking in that, like, you're so bad, you did everything wrong, what are you doing, blah 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 blah, or you're not where you need to be. Like, it just puts you down and down and down and down and down, and then you can't even enjoy the positives that happened that week or the positives that you did achieve that week. And it's so common to see that with clients. They'll make progress in a week, but they're then like, oh, I didn't get to the gym this day, I didn't do this, didn't do that. And I'm like, would you just look at your week and see what you've actually done and what you've done right this week? Not every week's going to be perfect. So that would be the kind of thing I would say, is like talking nicely to yourself.
I love that. I'm curious on your process with that. How do you handle it? Do you have like a weekly or daily reflection, or do you just, when that it comes into your head, a negative thought, you're like, hold on now, focus on the positive? How do you approach it?
There's two things, and one recently came up last year during like my college semester, because we did a module called a happiness module, it was called. And what we had to do there was pick one happiness enhancing activity and actually do it on a weekly basis. And the one thing I chose was the gratitude journal, because I was like, you couldn't pick exercise if you did exercise, so I couldn't get away with that. So yeah. I had to pick the gratitude journal, or like the Headspace app was another one. But the gratitude journal, because I'm someone who does think negatively across the week or things I've done bad. So the gratitude journal made me sit down and think, right, what actually happened good this week? And then the other thing would be like catching yourself when you're talking negatively, because I used to be, you know, say when I started off on my doing my fitness journey, whatever it was, I woke up every morning and it was always like pointing out, like, geez, I'm not leaner this time, my stomach still isn't where it needs to be, or my legs aren't as toned as they want to be, so on and so forth. And now I definitely do not do that now at this time. Definitely, like, I wake up and I actually point out, say, the better stuff or the good things that are this morning and all that kind of stuff.
I love that you have the two approaches, because you're kind of hammering it from both sides. Like, when you're using the gratitude journal, I actually have it here in front of me. I'm recording this from my office, and I use the gratitude journal every morning as well. And that kind of rewires your brain to start seeing more positive things in your life and in yourself. But also, it's very important to catch those negative thoughts or negative self-talk that comes in when it does. There's a very good book by Tara Brock called Radical Acceptance, which very much talks about that. I'm just catching those thoughts that they never go away, those negative thoughts on the way you look, the way you feel, or whatever it is, but it's just acknowledging them and just letting them pass over you, and getting into the habit of doing that consistently. I love that you use both approaches, because one is kind of a preventive measure and the other is a very active, okay, it's happened now, acknowledge it, and, you know, rewire and focus on the positive thing. Sarah, I can't thank you enough for this. This was awesome. I think we've covered so much in the sense of people that are in college for training, nutrition, sleep, some mindset stuff. Like, I love your mindset approach. It's not surprising that it is the way that it is in all that you've achieved, at, you know, in such a short period of time. So that's a testament to you. Tell everybody, where's the best place for them to find out more about you? Where do you spend your time, etc.?
Probably my two main ones is Instagram. That's main one, my baby. and that's Sarah Street, so Sarstri. And then my YouTube as well, which is just Sarah Maloney, which I'm getting back into this year. So that's the plan.
Yeah, I've seen that. You've been pretty consistent with the YouTube content. So I will
trust
be
me, trying to find knowledge around it.
But that's the thing. Like, it's I love, just as a side note, like, I think because of what you've done, what you've achieved, and where you're going, to be documenting that while you're going through college is twofold. One, it's going to have a massively beneficial for the people that are looking to you for inspiration, but it will also serve in 3, 4, 5 years time as a reference point for, I'm where I am today because this is how I thought when I was 20, 21, 22. So I'm so glad you're doing that, because I think it will be so beneficial for you, but so incredibly inspiring for the thousands of people that follow you and the people that will be continually moving into your ecosystem over the next few months, next few years. So just, I want to acknowledge that, and a massive thank you for doing it.
And can I just say one thing beforehand?
You can.
Just with regards to, like, say the mindset stuff in the gratitude journal, I was the person that you, and like, there's probably so many people that listen to this and in the same position as I was, that they thought, oh, that's all airy fairy kind of stuff, you know, I'm not gonna, that's a waste of time spending like the 10 or 15 minutes writing down all the things I'm grateful for. But I'm telling you, like, it's only like kind of the past 2 years or so that I've actually really, really focused on doing that, and it's made an absolute massive difference. And it, although it sounds airy fairy, it makes such a massive difference to your own mindset and your positive thinking as well.
I couldn't agree more. I was the exact same skeptic on the, like, I so bad, like, I'm even embarrassed to say, but I was always like, I'm not doing that fucking American woo-woo shit. Like, get the fuck out of here with gratitude. Like, but it's incredible. Like, it's grounded. Again, it's starting now to do a lot more grounded in the neuroscience of rewiring your brain. But it's something that I had that exact same thought philosophy, and that was a very unsupportive belief system for me. And it wasn't until I opened my mind to it, similar to you, and started applying it, you start to see everything in your life change. You know, tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. You got to control your mindset before you can change anything else. So I love that. That's the best possible note we could finish on, Sarah. I cannot thank you enough.
No problem at all. Thank you so much for having me.